The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You're Russ.
Very well, Justin. How are you? You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. But, you know, this week, I mean, we've been saying for a long time that interest rates have gone up and, you know, they'll hold them up higher until inflation comes down, unless there's job problems, there's employment rate shoots up. And this week, first of all, I saw Vodafone come out with a, laying off 11,000 people. That's a lot. And I thought, that's a lot of people. And then BT topped it. I'll see that and raise you. And BT came out about 50,000 by 2030.
They were talking about it. That includes third-party contractors and so on. But, yeah, I mean, and Vodafone, I would assume, would be a global number, not a UK number. But nevertheless, global, they are eye-catching figures at a time when, I know we've seen some big numbers bandied about in the US, particularly by big tech, but we've seen nothing like that in the UK, thankfully, for a long period of time.
Yeah, yeah. We do talk about this lag. You've mentioned it before. Yeah. The effect, you know, of the latency of the interest rate rising, and people say it can take 12 to 18 months. You know, and so I look at some CNBC, and they're also, well, you know, the employment market's holding up, and all that. Well, I thought, well, hang on a sec. We've been up at this level not that long. It's been a fast rate rise happened in the last year, but it's really started kicking in, you know, above 3, 4, 5 in the last few months. So we've got to give it a bit of time to bake in. But I still think it will probably have an effect on job numbers, don't you?
I think it might. I mean, if you look at Vodafone, its interest bill is now 1.7 billion euros a year. You know, it's got a capex bill of 5 billion euros a year. There's not an awful lot of ready cash to go around after that. And it's intriguing and it's the same with BT. You know, they've both got, you know, if you look at their market caps, you then add on the debt they have, the lease liabilities they have, and I think certainly in the case of BT, the pension deficit that it has, they are the same, if not more, than the market cap. So if anybody ever felt like buying BT, and I know Patrick Drahi and Altice have now got a 17 or 18% stake in, and there are various stakes in Vodafone held by sovereign wealth funds and investment funds. Anybody who's looking to, you know, buy the company, the bill is actually twice what it looks on paper, because all of those liabilities double the market cap. You don't just buy the assets, you inherit the liabilities as well, which is something that, you know, investors have always got to remember. And I think what's intriguing about both companies is, despite those stakes, which have prompted a bit of loosey-goosey takeover talk, and you have seen consolidation in the telecoms industry, or you've seen private equity make bids for telco players, because in theory there's relatively predictable cash flow there. I mean, BT's share price is now back at where it was in early 1985, which was within the first 6 months of its privatisation by the Thatcher government. And Vodafone is trading at levels not seen for 20 years. So you can see again why you think, wow, that might be interesting. But there's clearly a good reason why the shares are there, and some of it is debt, for sure. But also, and I feel a bit sorry, particularly for BT in some ways, but you've got the regulator on one side breathing fire. Mm-hmm. You've got lots of competition, mobile, broadband, fixed line, TV. And you've got customers who, quite rightly, are prepared and willing to shop around and change provider if they can get a better deal. Now, certainly in the case of BT, the shareholders want them to make more money, generate more cash and pay a higher dividend. If the company starts doing that, the regulator and the public are going to scream absolutely blue murder. So BT is in some ways in genuinely a no-win situation, which is probably why the shares are where they are. The regulator is sat all over it, and it's also being required by the government to roll out fibre to the premises through Openreach and get the nation's broadband speeds up. So it's providing a public good, which is fantastic, but that isn't necessarily, you know, a hugely profitable enterprise in the short term, at least, even allowing for some of the tax breaks that it's getting. So BT, lots of competition, fighting on lots of fronts, stiff regulation. That's a fairly tricky combination. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even now, if you look at the dividend, which was, what, 15.4p before the pandemic, it was cut going into that. It's half that now at 7.7p. It's still not covered by free cash flow. So, yes, optically, you're getting, you know, a dividend yield of 5, 6%. You know, I'm sure they won't want to have this discussion, but the market is telling you, as it is with Vodafone, the yield that's now on offer, the market is demanding a really high equity yield from these companies to compensate themselves for the risks that they're perceived to be, you know, associated with owning the paper. And Vodafone, again, if anything, because it's not just, BT's got its IT services business and its global IT services business, but Vodafone is fighting on even more fronts, because it's not just doing it in the UK, it's doing it in Italy, Germany, Spain, the Czech Republic, Romania, Turkey, South Africa, and it just probably doesn't necessarily have enough cash flow to fight 4G, 5G, mobile, broadband, fixed line, content in all of those markets. And, you know, the new boss, Margherita Della Valle, probably wasn't thrilled by the fact that her first set of results got a big raspberry from the market when she said, look, we're going to review the German market, we're going to review the Spanish market and see what we can do. But the market, I think, was probably looking for something a bit more dramatic, even though she's not been in the job for very long. I know she's been finance director for 5 years, but the market was looking for, like, actually, we wanted more. And what was good about the Vodafone presentation was it was refreshing in its honesty about what's working and what's not. There was a slide in there that showed which markets cover their cost of capital and which ones don't. The ones that didn't were Italy, Spain, the UK and Germany, their four biggest markets. Oof. The ones that did were all the little, and this is the challenge, right? And the ones that did were all the smaller ones. So that's the scale of the challenge that faces the country. It's already binned India, it's already binned America. You do wonder whether it probably has to shrink itself to growth, if that makes sense. Now, that might sound bonkers, but I think that might be the solution. So at the moment, I can see why people are asking, is it time, is it time? I think BT is just going to be regulated and just find it really hard to grow. I think Vodafone has got more chance, but it will probably have to shrink first, is my own guess. Having said that, I know that I've got, there are challenges for that business, because the debt, again, does limit the company's room for manoeuvre at the moment.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the chart. And
charts must be pretty ugly, I would think.
Well, I was looking at the daily chart of Vodafone, and I couldn't, so I zoomed out, I couldn't zoom out enough. And so I put on a weekly version, yet I go back to the 82 pence the share price sitting right now. Last time it was at this level was 30th of September 2002.
There you go.
Like 20 years ago, like you said.
Yeah.
And you think, it went from that sort of area in 2002, it went from 80 pence, it did get sort of like 257 in 2015, and then it's come back down basically up there, and down like a nice little humpback bridge. But it's been several false dawns of the share price falling back down into downtrend, you know?
I mean, you're getting a €0.09 a share dividend there, which is, 7.5p in UK money. So on an 80-odd p share price, that's a thumper of a dividend yield. Yeah. I mean, you're knocking towards 10%. But, I mean, there have been lots of companies that have been offering on paper 10% dividend yields in the FTSE 100 over the past 5 or 10 years, and none of them actually paid it because they cut the dividend instead.
Yeah.
So again, the message that the market is sending at the moment is, you know, we think there are some challenges here. We want a really high yield to compensate us for them. And, I'm sure this is not a discussion that the new management team wants to have, but the market is starting to prod at that dividend and say, is this really a reliable figure? And I think that's probably one of the reasons why the share price has been under pressure so much in the past few weeks. If it does prove reliable, happy days. I mean, you really are getting, a fabulous yield there. But at the moment, it just feels like the market's not convinced, shall we say.
No. Yeah, exactly. It's funny how people start looking for dividend yields. Like, so you've got to be careful. And I tend to look around. I mean, 5% is a decent dividend yield, was covered, but I said, anything going above 6, 7, 8, it's not sustainable sometimes.
It's there for a reason. I mean, tobacco stocks yield that for more than a reason, because people don't know if they're going to be around in 20 or 30 years' time. Mm. Oil companies, you could argue to a degree, something broadly similar. And otherwise, you tend to get really fat dividend yields when the market's pricing in a cut. I guess that's the thing that you need to sit and do your work on. I mean, the BT thing, as you say, that 40,000-50,000 job cuts they're talking about is between a third and 40% of the workforce, including outplacements. And they're talking about, in some cases, using artificial intelligence and AI to replace customer service staff, for example. Now, obviously, there's this now big debate on what does AI mean for the world, for the human race, and also from the narrow perspective of investment. I guess I can see exactly where BT is coming from. I guess the challenge that we have, that they have, we have, is, I mean, clearly ChatGPT can write some pretty good history essays now and play chess brilliantly and Mahjong and Go and everything else. And his AI is clearly zooming along in that respect. I guess the big challenge for it is, can it deal with situations where there is empathy required or there's a human and or moral element to it? And interesting, I've got a friend who works in the industry and he says, look, it will do amazing things. And now the machine does say, these are the possible conclusions, but you'd also need to consider moral and ethical issues. But it then doesn't go into what they could be because I don't think it's there yet. So if you're if you're a company, we've all had as people had bad experiences trying to get through to companies through automated helplines, right? It's frustrating. It's not great. You don't feel you're getting the amount of customer service that you want. And again, I think the danger with an AI would be, again, lots and lots of unhappy customers feeling they're just being brushed off by a machine rather than something that understands their personal circumstances. So I think that's something that we still face a challenge with AI, and companies need to be aware of when looking to use it as, understandably, a productivity tool.
Yeah. It's amazing, you know, people speculating where it's going to go, and it is phenomenal sort of technology, because like I said, it will exponentially, you know, develop quicker the more data it has. The more data it has, the more it can accumulate. And so it can, it's you know, phenomenal sort of. But I was looking at the five sectors, because originally people were thinking, it'll be mundane sort of areas or sectors that it'll take over. But there's a change in thought of that now, because it's more with lots of data, you know, that can be automatic, law, some of that. But I was just looking, five sectors that are most likely to be affected by AI, and they've got here, number five is transport, with, you know, sort of cars being driven by computers pretty much. At four, they've got to healthcare, and you understand that. There's a lot of data, especially in sort of, clinical studies and all that stuff. At three, there's marketing.
Empathy needed there, though, I would think.
Well, in the bedside manner, but I suppose in the clinical tests and all that, and probabilities of outcomes. So three is marketing. Two, Russ, listen to this, finance.
Ooh. I know. Yeah. Luckily, I know. I'm aware of it, and I've seen there has been a trial done where an AI program, you know, outperformed fund manager, but it was only a 2-month trial. But again, let's keep an eye on it. And frankly, the lack of emotion will probably be something in the machine's favour, quite frankly, because it will view things in an incredibly dispassionate fashion. It won't fall in love with the stock or pick a fight with the management team. Mm. It will just be very, very dispassionate. So in that respect, that's probably a good thing. But equally, all the best traders I've ever known all tell you it's about feel and gut instinct, don't they?
Yes, I was thinking that. Part of me was thinking, you know, emotion is a good thing. Some people say people get too emotional if you're overexposed to stock, of course, yeah. Or if a market sells off massively, then an algorithm could say, well, you know, looking back at probability, there's a very good time to buy. So they just buy in, regardless of, you know, the doom in the newspapers, they just buy in. But also, like I said, having some emotion sometimes does help, because you can sort of weigh up sort of, there are certain stocks we know trade way above what their valuation should be because people love the brand. And can AI sort of pick that up? Maybe there's a brand score, I don't know. But there's certain, like I said, gut feelings and emotions that humans will always have that a machine can't. So I suppose they can try and replicate that in some way. But who knows? But IT is at the top anyway of that.
IT at the top anyway, okay. Yeah. I suppose obviously educational resources have been an area after that, US big US profit warning at Chegg, whatever it was, and people are looking at publishing as well, aren't they, in terms of writers being replaced and newswire services being much more automated than they are already. So I guess that's another area that's in the firing. My suspicion is, you know, AI, I mean, to me this feels, I mean, I was a tech analyst at an investment bank in the 1990s, and the sort of guessing game that we're involved in now, is this good? Is it feels to me like early stage internet in the mid 1990s to late 1990s, when we didn't know what it was going to be. We knew it was going to be big. We didn't know what it was going to be mean. Was it going to be good for everybody? Was it going to be bad? In the end, I think it's been pretty revolutionary for the best of possible reasons. And if you bought a basket of 100 stocks, you probably found one or two that really made a difference, and lots of others fell by the wayside. And I suspect that AI will probably end up something similar from a technological productivity and investment point of view as the internet was 25 years ago, so is my guess.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what's different a little bit now is that 25 years ago, there were no big tech companies, you know, in the space with loads of money. But now there are. And these, what's worrying is these big companies can dominate, and so they can get even more powerful because they have the money and resources to throw at AI, and they have the data as well. And that's what's a bit worrying, whereas before, everyone with India was starting, there was tech companies, they're all pretty much starting off on the same yep. field, a level playing field. But now it's skewed towards the big companies, and the Microsoft, the Googles, all that, Apple, they've all got the data and they've all got the power already. So that's what's a little bit worrying. Maybe AI in itself, though, will level the playing field. Maybe get these.
I suspect it probably will. I mean, if you look at the history of technology over time, and you can do this by reading things like Robert X. Cringely's book Accidental Empires, that goes back to the, you know, the start of the US semiconductor industry and talks about how dominant it was, which is now less dominant because a lot of its production has been outsourced to Taiwan. But, you know, if you go back to technology, mainframe computers were the kings of the world in the 60s, and that was basically IBM. And then you got mini computers and microcomputers, which were, and then, well, then you got the bunch companies, Burroughs, Univac, Novell, Control Data, and Honeywell. Then you got the mini computer companies, and then you got the desktop computer companies like Gateway and Dell. And then you got the Windows and Intel dominance. Then you got smartphones, and you got tablets, and there've been different winners at pretty much every stage of that cycle. Microsoft is what a rare example of a firm that has brilliantly reinvented itself.
Yeah.
Apple did reinvent itself. IBM. Kind of. Dell is just about. Oracle, maybe. But there's been loads and loads and loads and loads of others who've fallen by the wayside. And I think while it's naturally tempting to assume what is the winner now will stay the winner, you know, Nokia and Ericsson and all those people had loads and loads of money to throw at getting smartphones right and couldn't do it. And they got brushed aside by Apple and Samsung. So yes, it's tempting to think that Google and Alphabet and Meta will prevail, but it's not guaranteed, and customers might not want them to. The regulator might stick their oar in, or in the end they might just not get it right, you know. And there's no guarantee that, and you know, I from what I can tell, you know, some of Alphabet's early trials haven't gone absolutely according to plan from what little I've read about it. So there's no guarantee that the next generation of winners will be this current generation will be the next generation. And that's the other reason, always, not to get too carried away, as you said, on valuation and fall in love with them, because things, you know, disruptors eventually are normally disrupted by the next wave, and that's what you've always got to be careful of.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I mean, Bard, which is, you know, Alphabet, Google's.
That's version, the one. There you go.
Well, now it's come around. They're saying that now it's now better than, and in fact, it's. Oh. I don't know what the level is. It's now getting better than ChatGPT because, and they're saying that the S&P literally have rallied recently on the hype of this AI, haven't they? Of the big stock. And I'm just thinking about Apple. Can they fail now? When you got like $64 billion of cash. Which is nuts. You just buy the best startups or the best AI startups. Just bring them into the fold. Because
I guess then that's one for the regulator, right?
Yeah,
I guess
exactly.
Then the regulator, whether the regulator feels it's appropriate to intervene, whether it can. I mean, also, if an Apple, if it wanted to, could just stop its buybacks and its dividends and generate another $20 billion a quarter of cash and use that as well. So it's definitely got the resource. Again, there's no guarantee they'll get it right. But as you said, the odds you would perhaps suspect are in their favour. But there's no certainties.
Yeah, I know exactly. That's what makes it all interesting, isn't it?
Very yes, it is. If it was that obvious, none would all be sitting. We'd all be sat at home doing it, not doing any work, and then there'd be nothing to invest in, would there?
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous stuff for us. Thanks for that. Speak next week.
Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.